This is Jim Inkster coming today on Talk Louisiana. We will visit with Republican political consultant Scott Wilfong and Democratic blogger and commentator Dane Sherman. They'll comment on the political consequences of the special legislative session, which is now in week two, the challenges of President Trump, and the new leadership in the Louisiana GOP. Wilfong ran second to Louis Gervich of New Orleans, who is now the chairman of the Republican Party in our state. Sherman is head of the Faculty Senate at Southeastern Louisiana University, but he'll be commenting today as Dane Sherman, private citizen. Also, Vanity Fair editor Howard Blum on Russian spies during the Cold War and the relevance to current revelations that Russia tried to tamper with the 2016 United States presidential election. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana on 89.3 WRKF. Your number is 877-217-5757, wherever you are. In Baton Rouge, it's 297-5633. And you can always email us, talk@talklouisiana.org. Scott Wilfong is with us, the veteran Republican political consultant, and soon we are slated to be joined by Democratic blogger and commentator Dane Sherman from Hammond. But Scott was in the race to become the Republican chair and succeed Roger Villery, who's held this post for 14 years. Saturday, there was a vote by the GOP hierarchy, and according to reports, Scott finished second. We know who finished first, Louis Gervich of New Orleans, a businessman who's been the secretary of the GOP, and he is the new chair of the Louisiana Republican Party. And before we talk about other matters, Scott, is it a disappointment?
Well, sure, it's a disappointment, but we have a good chairman, and I encourage you to get him on the air as soon as possible. Louis has been a veteran of Louisiana politics, and he's got my full support. We were friends before the race. We always said we were going to be after, and we are. So,
and you had stated your top goal was to knock off Governor John Bel Edwards next year. This is a 2-year term, so I suspect that'll be the top goal of Chairman Gervich.
Well, it certainly has to be for the whole party. I mean, we've got to. The chairman can't do it by himself, and none of us can. It's going to take the work of everybody, and really the situation is the party's got to get busy fundraising, and Louis is a established fundraiser, so we'll see if we can how much we can put in the bank between now and next year.
Well, story in today's Baton Rouge Advocate from Elizabeth Crisp and Mark Ballard, who's with us weekly. The state house burst through a logjam that's kept most the important pieces of legislation holed up in committee during the special session. In a rare but critical Sunday gathering that stretched into the evening, the House Ways and Means Committee agreed to send legislation that is seen as vital to shoring up the state budget before temporary tax measures expire this summer to the full House for consideration. The panel voted 10-7 to advance a measure that seeks to rein in a tax break for middle and upper income people who itemize deductions when they file their taxes. And members also voted 12-6 to advance a sales tax proposal that would allow the state to continue collecting taxes on some items exempted before changes in 2016. And temporarily extend one quarter of the penny sales tax hike that is set to expire on June 30th. Now, this is only a committee move, but it's an important development. Scott, how do you see it?
Well, I think that the exemptions probably are the way that me personally. I think that's the only way you're going to solve this. It's disappointing with the sales tax that they continue to just think that putting more tax burden on the people is the answer. You know, when they passed this 2 years ago, 3 years ago, the promise was that it would expire, and it appears that's the route they're going. Instead of making hard decisions, they're going to continue to do what they've always done.
One quarter of the penny. So,
but who does it affect? You know, the Republicans always get called out for being harsh and everything, but the sales taxes hurt the poor. That's the bottom line. Rich people can afford a sales tax. Poor people, it hurts.
What options does the governor have?
Well, he's always had the option of getting serious about cuts. You know, the Constitution, I remind everybody, the Constitution gives the governor the authority to decide on the spending, and the legislature gets to appropriate the revenue. The legislature needs to keep that in mind and not give him the money that he's calling for, because revenue estimating has been wrong for, I think, 16 or 17 years in a row. I always hear Rick Edmonds quote that. and yet Edwards refuses to even back off a percent of it. I mean, the Republicans' original goal was to just say, let's spend 98%.
Sometimes it's wrong the other way, though, isn't it?
Sometimes it is, but, you know, if you know your salary is $80,000 a year, why don't you try to live off $78,000 a year? Then you'd have $2,000 in savings, mm-hmm. and if you somehow had a bad expense come up, you'd be all right. The state seems to – that's what the governor won't do.
All right. Well, we had lots of cuts during the Jindal years, and higher education and health care got the brunt of it, as the Constitution makes happen. So can we really afford more reductions in spending?
Well, absolutely you can, and this is the thing I preach all the time. Not all dedications are constitutional. A lot of them are statutory. So you want to have courage, get in there and undedicate some of these statutorily dedicated revenue streams, which only takes a majority vote of the legislature. They scream about higher education and health care, but those are the two things that are on the table. Just open up some more items. And of course, there's the whole argument about the Constitutional Convention, which I favor. I favor a limited call for that. But no, the governor just, typical Democrat, typical liberal, spend every penny we got, and if we can get any more, let's spend that too.
All right. Scott Wilfong, full of vim and vigor, saying that Governor John Bel Edwards is a typical liberal spending Democrat. Dane Sherman is joining us. Dane Sherman, you're from the governor's neck of the woods, and right now some say he's got few options, and after all, he only has 41 members of the House who are members of his party out of 105, and only 14 members of the Senate out of 39. So is the governor doing the best he can with the hand that he is facing right now?
Absolutely. He is absolutely doing the best he has. When somebody before you, being Bobby Jindal, burned the house down and the barn, you got to take some drastic measures, and he's had to. Thankfully, he's had a lot of Republican support, both in the general electorate and the state. And it looks like, from what I was watching last night, Sunday night, I was watching some of the work in the legislature, and it looks like the House is moving forward, and they're trying to, you know, do the reasonable and responsible thing. I am personally sad that I know Scott says he's not that sad, but I'm sad that Scott is not the head of the Louisiana GOP.
Well,
I really wish
that.
He would have been, and here's why: because I would at least one head of the party would return my calls.
All right, so you're a Democrat, and you're saying the current head of the Democratic Party doesn't return.
Oh, that goes out of the question. In fact, I think what Scott needs to do is Scott should take over the Louisiana Democratic Party, yeah. And we might win a couple of elections.
All right. Any chance you're going to switch parties, Scott?
No. Slim and none, and Slim just left town.
All right. 877-217-5757 is your number. 297-5633 for Scott Wilfong and Dane Sherman. Matt Doyle producing, along with Becca Dill. And you tell me who to go to first. It's David in Atlanta. David, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, David.
Good morning to everyone. You know, President Trump wants better school security, so he addresses the problem by proposing to cut the school security budget in the federal budget. He wants more background checks, but he hasn't said regarding gun purchases, but he never said anything about not allowing people on the no-fly list to purchase firearms. He wants more mental health services, but yet he's trying to do away with Obamacare, which covers mental health services.
All right, hold tight. Don't go anywhere, David. But the story over the weekend, the governor wants teachers to have an opportunity to carry weapons. Dane, you're a professor at a major university. Would you like to be packing heat in the classroom at SLU?
I wouldn't. And my wife also is a veteran teacher. She's almost in her 30th year. You want to hear some ranting and raving, you talk about it to her. Let me tell you what I think on this particular thing, and people might agree and disagree. Yeah, I believe if you're a post-certified, and that's a law enforcement designation that, you know, state police have and sheriff's deputies that have gone through the post-certification, I say if you're post-certified, yeah, you can carry a concealed weapon, a gun, in the classroom. If you're not, no. And if you're not willing to get post-certified and keep up your certification, I don't want you with a gun on campus.
Is it a good idea to arm teachers, Scott?
I think to a limited extent. I don't think that it needs to be a requirement. I think the teacher, obviously, you have to have some comfort level yourself. I've done a lot of firearms training, and it's not for everybody. But you know, every time I walk into a bank, I walk past somebody sitting there holding a gun on their hip. Every time I walk into a courthouse, I walk past a dozen people with guns on their mm-hmm. hips, and they're protecting things that aren't near as important as what's in those classrooms. So I just fail to see the this hesitation, this extreme reaction of we need guns in the classrooms. Well, if we're going to use guns to protect our money and guns to protect our courtrooms, why suddenly is it that we don't want guns to protect our children? Now, the individual teacher, that's another argument. But
well, according to reports, there were four sheriff's deputies in Parkland, Florida, who had guns and didn't have the courage to go in and take on the shooter.
Absolutely. I think
so. These are trained sheriff's deputies who, if the president is right, called them cowards. How can we expect teachers to act in a situation like that?
Well, first of all, you're assuming they were trained. I would say quite the opposite. They were obviously not trained sheriff's deputies. You know, the bottom line on this whole situation, law enforcement, FBI, local, mental health, everyone absolutely failed, and yet we want to blame the NRA. I don't understand that.
877-217-5757. Chuck in Lafayette. Chuck, you're on the air with Dane Sherman and Scott Wilfong.
Yes, I want to get back to Louisiana. I have a question regarding cuts. You know, when Jindal was in office, he cut higher ed from 76% state funding to about 26%. Hospitals have been closed, and that burden was passed on to the other hospitals who have to now deal with those people in emergency rooms. So exactly where are we going to cut more? Maybe I just don't know where, but tell me where else we're going to cut. Thank you.
Thank you. 877-217-5757. We'll return with Scott Wilfong and Dane Sherman, and this is Talk Louisiana on 89.3 WRKF. Back after this 90-second pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Scott Wilfong, Republican, and Dane Sherman, Democrat, are with us. And if you'd like to join the conversation, 877-217-5757, or you can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. We've gotten several emails, and I'll try to get to at least a few of them before we part company with Scott and Dane. Diego at LSU has been waiting patiently. Diego, you're on the air with Scott Wilfong and Dane Sherman.
All right, so good morning. I had a question about Louisiana College Republicans at LSU. So a couple of days ago, there was a little bit of controversy, and WBRZ reported that College Republicans was going to bring in this guy named Milo, an alt-right conservative from Breitbart, to speak. And there was a lot of pushback from the general, you know, LSU and from administration. Could you speak up on if that's a good movement for College Republicans or not?
I actually saw that, I think, on Facebook. I assumed he is coming in. If he's not, I'm not aware of that. But, yeah, Milo Yiannopoulos, or I can't say the last name.
Yeah, he's been here once before.
Yeah. I mean, he's controversial. He's got some views that are different. But I know that... You know, colleges seem to be open to anybody with the most extreme views, unless they happen to be conservative. So,
he was welcomed at LSU.
Well, he did, and he had some.
He got some problems at Berkeley.
He had some other problems, and he's had some personal issues. But look, there's a. I didn't go to LSU, but I know about Free Speech Alley, and you can't have it both ways. Do you want free speech or do you not? So, I encourage the college Republicans to bring him in. I don't see a downside to that. I think critical thinking is what we want from our young people. So,
Dane, what do you think about bringing people of all political stripes to college campuses in our state?
Well, unlike Scott, I did graduate from LSU. Thank God I'm not paying for it anymore. But when I did go to LSU, I did hear some pretty wild stuff on Free Speech Alley. I don't like this guy, Milo. I think he's repulsive. But, yeah, bring him. It's LSU is going to be okay. The students are going to be okay. You're not going to ever get me on record trying to stop people from speaking on college campuses. It's just not going to happen. So, yeah, bring him. And he's repulsive, but I wouldn't stop anybody from going to try to hear.
All right. Sherry Garisco writes, please ask Mr. Wilfong where he will cut, what agency and what programs and what dedications would he open specifically, and what's the revenue change for each? She's asking you to play the governor.
Well, I will not. I will not go there. I will simply say that the governor's administration has rejected all opportunity, even the Ohio checkbook idea. If you watch Jay Darden in the committee hearing, he had every reason in the world why we don't want to open up our spending details to the public. So obviously, when you're trying to hide something, where there's smoke, there's fire. So they know there's places to cut. They just don't want to be upfront with us.
Are there places to cut, Dane Sherman?
There are always some places to cut. We all know that. I think the Ohio checkbook is really about a big software deal and some people getting payoff locally and in Louisiana on this software. It's going to cost millions of dollars. I think that's what it's all about. I think we already have LaTrack and all these other things to track spending. I think it's just a nothing burger. But what Scott has done is very consistent. The Republicans will not give clear places to cut. They just say cut, and nobody wants to cut TOPS or some of these other programs, and they just don't want to go on record as saying, hey, you need to cut this right here.
Now, I will.
You know, like cut the Saints. Now, he has said before, let's cut Tom Benson to the Saints. I know we probably both agreed on that at some level. But, when it comes to governing, Democrats do a better job. When it comes to marketing, Republicans do way better job.
And I will say I do favor on TOPS. Me personally, I have said for some time we have to get the standards up for TOPS. If no offense, but if you graduate high school with a 2.5 GPA, I don't think I owe you a free college education. I don't see where we can't go get better on that.
Steve Wenham, the former budget director who was with us last week, says Scott is flat wrong and he knows that the governor can only recommend. The legislature has total control over appropriations and other laws. The governor could have made better recommendations, but I don't blame him for legislative inaction, right, Steve?
And the governor has something, Steve, called the line item veto, which you well know, and that's what he uses to hold over the legislature. That's why the governor of Louisiana is so powerful. He absolutely controls the spending, whether you like it or not.
Here's Scott Clemens writing, the legislature needs to roll back some of the generous tax subsidies the state is paying out each year to corporations. Is that something
Yes, absolutely. You solve this problem with the corporate well, getting a handle on the corporate welfare, the exemptions, those sort of things, and the governor just wants to continue talking about more revenue, mm-hmm. and I guess you can't blame him. It's always fun to have more money. It's hard to make tough decisions.
All right. Well, having a Republican talk about corporate welfare, Dane Sherman, that's a new development. Yeah.
Again, it's one more step that I think towards Scott taking over the Louisiana Democratic Party. I'm proud to hear it.
The Democratic Party.
Yes, the Democratic Party. I've already said that that's his home, and we can't. And again, I already have his number. He usually returns my calls, always returns my texts. And we need him. We need him in the Louisiana Democratic Party. I might get involved in state politics for the first time.
Well, I saw Roger Villery quoted in The Advocate Sunday as saying, some of my best friends are black. And, Scott, I think it's true that some of your best friends are Democrats.
I do have some very good friends. A very close confidant of Governor Edwards is a friend of mine, so we talk.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. Yeah, if it's true, as reported, that the Parkland deputy had an incident with that teenager who was the shooter before, then it stands to reason that the guy knew that there was a deputy armed in the school, so that kind of makes it not a soft target. The other thing is we've had a machine gun ban that went into effect in 1994. Ronald Reagan supported it, Gerald Ford, and Jimmy Carter. Those three presidents wrote letters to the House of Representatives supporting that ban, and it expired in 2004, and we've been suffering ever since.
All right. Thank you, Phil. What about banning assault weapons?
There's so much wrong with that statement. First of all, it was not a ban on machine guns. Those have been banned since the 1930s, I believe. It was a ban on AR-15 style rifles, which, by the way, AR-15 does not stand for assault rifle. It stands for Armalite rifle. So there's a little bit for your listeners. The ban lasted from 1994 to 2004. It had statistically zero effect on crime. The only
How do you know?
The FBI statistics bear it out.
We didn't have all these mass shootings.
There is less violent crime today than there was in the 1990s.
But that goes into handguns and the whole deal and just murders in general. We didn't have these massive shootings with assault weapons. We had Columbine in 1999. That happened. Mm. But we've had how many in the last year?
Does it really matter what you're shot with, Jim? If you kill someone with a 9mm,
you can kill a lot more people with an AR-15 than you can with
a Glock pistol. A Glock 9mm holds 17 rounds. I can bring four Glocks into a school and do the same damage as you can with an AR-15. It's absolutely a false premise. It's a ridiculous thing, and the assault weapons ban, I think even Dane would agree with this, had no effect on violent crime.
No effect. No effect. Dane?
I wouldn't say no effect, but I'm going to make some of my liberal friends very uneasy when I say that not all gun legislation, just because a gun looks a certain way, that does not mean that it needs to be banned. That's a little ridiculous. You know, could we all go back? I mean, look, I'm going to tell you what I hunt with. I hunt with a bolt action, and I hunt with a single shot. That's what I deer hunt with. And, you know, that's adequate. In fact, a lot of times I like to shoot the single shot because it's so much easier in the dark when you get into a deer stand to know whether you load it or unload it. It's just easier to handle.
All right, Chalmette. Representative Raymond Garofalo is introducing a bill, he says, in the regular session that starts March 12th, that would allow school educators to carry weapons on campus if they have proper training. Garofalo first suggested the idea 4 years ago, but it was shot down by the Criminal Justice Committee. And in the wake of recent threats and attacks, Garofalo says allowing guns in the classroom may prevent future mass school shootings. Scott, you're on board.
Well, I like the play on words. It was shot down a year ago, but
4 years ago.
I know Representative Garofalo, and he is a good conservative, so I'll be interested to see how this bill moves and if it gets some traction, which I have a feeling like it will.
Now, President Trump's calling for raising the age to 21 for an assault weapon. Is that good?
I think that's ridiculous, but I do agree that we need to have an age of majority that's
ridiculous,
clear and defined.
All right. So, we'll be back after this pause for the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Matt Doyle and Becca Dill are producing, and your number is 877-217-5757 for Talk Louisiana. Talk at talklouisiana.org. Scott Wilfong and Dane Sherman are with us. John West says, why do we have police if everyone else must do their job? We had four sheriff's deputies, according to reports, with guns, and they declined to take on the shooter on Valentine's Day in Parkland, Florida. So why are teachers expected to do the job for law enforcement?
Well, how many of you out there keep a cop in your house all night long for that bump in the night or somebody breaking through a window? Cops respond to crime. They don't prevent crime.
Well, they had four cops.
Exactly.
Who
and
didn't
even,
respond.
And even with that training, you couldn't rely on them. I'm not disparaging police. I'm just saying we all bear some responsibility for our own safety. And the fact is, on an active shooter situation, the police are minutes away. And the teachers are the front line. So I don't understand what this great fear, if they're trained to handle it, why would we not want that protecting our most valuable people in America?
Dane, your thoughts.
I've made it very clear. I have no reason to say that a teacher who is post-certified.
Go ahead.
To carry that weapon. If they're not post-certified, I don't want them in the classroom with a gun. It's as simple as that. I'm being very specific. In an active shooter situation, what I understand from speaking to law enforcement, the minute they know that it's an active shooter, if it's even one person, they go in after that. They don't wait. They don't wait for backup. They immediately go in, and undoubtedly that lesson was not learned by the four officers who were there.
Mike in Central writes, Australia instituted a ban on semi-automatic assault-style weapons in 1996 after a mass shooting and hasn't had a mass shooting since. The U.S. has the highest gun death rate per capita in the Western world, and we also have some of the most lax gun restrictions in the world. That from Mike in Central, Scott. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was about 10 million guns in Australia before that happened, and it was easier to get a handle on those. There's about 350 million guns in America right now, so quite a different situation.
877-217-5757 is your number. David in Shenandoah. David, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. I heard him talk about the capacity for the Glock of a 17-round clip. What would they propose be a possible size of a clip or a magazine for a semi-automatic pistol or rifle would be suggested?
Dane, what do you think as far as the size of a clip? Do you have any thoughts on reducing what would be allowed by law? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dane.
You know, maybe 10 rounds is a reasonable number. But, I mean, what Scott didn't say is that I understand that you can buy a Glock and get a 30-round clip. I think that's what, if I'm not mistaken, that's what
33 round. They make a 33 round for a Glock. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that you know, and they can be bought rather easily, and so, you know, we need to really look at this thing from the bottom up, and we need to be smart about it, not just reactionary. But we got to do some things to make this country safer.
I'll just say, when you can tell me the situation and how many bullets I'll need, I'll tell you how big I need the magazine. In the meantime, I'll take all I can get.
Mike in Plaquemine. Mike, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. Stupidity really trickles down all the way from the White House to the states. Why in the world would we want those teachers to be armed, to have that kind of responsibility? What's going to happen is you're going to have more and more college students that don't even want to go into teaching. If I got to go in there with a gun and fight for my life, then I'm not going into it. Now, we got a lot of ex-military that need jobs. Let's put some ex-military guys in front of these schools with weapons who are trained and let them deal with this. Thank you all.
Professor Sherman, your thoughts?
I don't have any disagreement with that. I think he's telling the truth. If you wanted to be a state trooper, you'd become a state trooper. You wouldn't become an elementary school teacher.
All right, Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Wilfong and Sherman. Hi, Dan.
Yes. Yeah, Mr. Wilfong, in order to protect this most valuable person, in charge, you know, the children, should the Republicans agree to increase taxes in order to pay for the training of teachers?
Yes, Paul Scott from Opelousas.
All right, hold on. you're putting the calls on the air. So go ahead. Your thoughts to the comments by Dan downtown.
To his point, yes, we should invest in the security of our schools, but we don't need to raise taxes to do that. There's plenty of wasted money in government right now.
All right, thank you, Scott. Yeah, let's try Paul Scott in Opelousas. Paul, you're on Talk Louisiana. Paul, are you there? Okay, let's. Let's get Dane's thoughts. You were in rare form when we went to the discussion a few moments ago about guns in classrooms, Dane, and you speak is on the front lines.
Yeah, I mean, if I wanted to pack a gun every day to work, and I would have, I would have filled out that application, and maybe they would have hired me as a state trooper. Well, but if I didn't do that when I was 24 years old, and I was definitely considering it.
We act as if we can somehow control these situations. You know, a midnight screening of Batman seemed like a safe place to be. I'd rather not have to have a gun there. But, boy, I sure would have wanted one if I was in that theater. I don't understand this idea that somehow not arming the people that are on the front lines makes us safer. You cannot control these situations.
Paul in Opelousas, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Paul.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning. Great conversation. Just, and maybe you might have addressed it already, but if this would happen, you would arm a teacher, who would pay for it? Where would the money to support the training and the ammo, and who would you pick in a classroom? Thank you very much.
Oh, I mean, I'll just go a little personal. I serve on a private school board here, which we have the right to do it if we want to. We don't need the permission from the state. And we've had those very discussions, and obviously you identify the people, one, that want to do it. You don't want a teacher that is not interested in it. But there are teachers who are familiar with firearms or do competitive shooting. You obviously identify those folks, and then you invest in the training. I mean, we use private money to do it, but the state, certainly, you're talking about a very small amount of money for firearms training, a few hundred dollars per class. We're not talking about something that's going to break the budget, and it has to have a higher priority if we're going to get serious about it.
Joshua in Gonzales. Hi, Joshua. You're on the air with Scott and Dane.
Hey, I just wanted to make a point that a caller earlier talked about Australia's problem. It was mentioned that they had fewer guns, but he did mention that after they got rid of the guns, they had more violent crime from beatings and knife attacks after that. So
All right. Well, that would happen, but it's a little more efficient to kill somebody with a gun than it is with a fist.
I was going to say, just thanks for that point. If you scour the news today, you will see a report of a stabbing in Massachusetts that occurred just
all
yesterday.
Right. Okay.
But it's not sexy and it doesn't involve a gun. So I would just point out, though, that the person who was killed is no less dead.
But more people die with guns than with knives.
In Australia, that's not the case.
Well, that's because guns are outlawed.
so that makes
couple,
it better,
a couple of
I guess.
Inquiries from listeners. Do we need to make sure our law enforcement officers are in good physical condition?
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Thank you for that point. It has really...
It is appalling.
It is appalling.
In some cases. Now, some of them are in great physical condition, but that should be expected, shouldn't it?
Of course it
from
should
be. From the sheriff and the chief of police
well,
on down.
Here's the hard thing about law enforcement. They have asked for a basic militarization of their forces over the last 20 to 30 years, and we have provided it with armored vehicles, AR-15 rifles. But if you want to have a militarized force, then you need to have at least a military standard of conditioning for those officers.
Scott has made his point. Dane, what about the physical condition of some of these law enforcement types?
Well, certainly we're going to have to put those elementary school teachers through the rounds if they're going to be packing heat in second grade. It's going to – maybe it'll be great. Jim, maybe we'll all get in better shape and the librarians will put away their sweaters and they'll start doing some jumping jacks.
Well, it would have been better, I think, if those officers had gone in and – this time, I think the president is right. The man who sat out the Vietnam War with bone spurs is right when he says they were cowards.
Absolutely.
Andy in Goodwood. Andy, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. Scott, I was I'm taken aback by this argument about, there's many murders with knives. It's hard to kill 17 people with a knife. It's a disingenuous argument. But the point I want to make, or the question I'd like to make is, there's a party in our country who wants to make it hard for people to vote. Voter ID, making poor people pay for an identification so they can go exercise their right to vote. But you guys are completely opposed to people being registered or licensed or identified as capable and mentally able to carry a firearm. What's the difference, and why don't we have a nationwide licensing system for people to own guns?
All right. Thank you, Andy. Scott?
Well, there's a lot there to address. First of all, an absolute false statement that the caller just made is that it somehow costs money to get an ID. It does not. It is free to get a state ID, at least in Louisiana, and I'm pretty sure in every state across the country. So that argument doesn't even hold water. The second is, they actually are similar in that they're both constitutional protections. I don't want to see anyone who's 18 years of age denied the right to vote. I also don't want to see anyone of that age denied their Second Amendment rights. When you start picking and choosing, pretty soon we're going to start saying which ones we don't want to have the First Amendment rights. And somebody might pick Jim Inkster, and then we wouldn't get to hear this show every day. So I think it's just an absurd argument.
877-217-5757 is your number. 297-5633. We're going to go to the break, spend a few more minutes with Dane Sherman and Scott Wilfong. As we head to the break, a listener wants to know if you're packing heat right now, Scott.
No.
Okay. We're back after this pause. 2 minutes on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. 877-217-5757. In a few minutes, we'll hear from Vanity Fair editor Howard Blum on Russian spies during the Cold War. 877-217-5757. Please be brief in our final moments with Scott Wilfong and Dane Sherman. We go to Doug on Airline. Hi, Doug. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. You know, the NRA and Mr. Wilfong have a distorted view of the Second Amendment, that it's some type of absolute right, which is not subject to any type of limitation. None of our rights are absolute. And in the Heller ruling, Justice Scalia himself said that the right to own a fire or possess arms is subject to regulation, like all of our rights. So this idea that we have this right to carry any type of weapon anywhere at any time for any reason is not what our Constitution is built on. The First Amendment has limitations. I can't yell fire in a crowded theater if there's not a fire, without getting prosecuted for it. But under their attitude, it's like, well, it's no one's business. If I want to yell fire in that theater whenever I feel like it, I can do it. And if I can't, my First Amendment rights have been infringed.
Now, it sounds good. There's just the problem is it's not correct. The NRA and gun owners everywhere do support the idea of background checks. If those had actually worked properly, this guy wouldn't have gotten a gun. We do favor the Gun Act of 1933 that says you must have a tax stamp to own Class 3 weapons like machine guns, like suppressors. So the idea that we favor open and a wide open militarized weaponry in the hands of civilians is not true. But it sounds good, I understand, when you're trying to make a talking point and demonize the NRA.
All right, Dane.
NRA is not for gun owners. NRA is for gun manufacturers, and that's who they represent. And so we need to keep that in mind and in all of our discussions that they are a lobbying group for gun manufacturers, not for general people who want to actually shoot guns or hunt or anything like that. And that's one reason that I think the NRA is off track on a lot of these issues.
877-217-5757, William in Opelousas. William, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Thank you, Jim. I just wanted to make a couple of questions. I was in the Air Force and I shot a M16, and my understanding it was the bullet that did all the damage. I'd like to know what kind of bullets these guns use, these AR-15s. And also, is there nothing else they can do other than putting guns in the school? What we did with our airports? Thank you.
All right.
Well, I guess as far as the bullet goes, it's the only problem with rifles is they shoot bullets at a much faster rate. That's why the damage that's done from a rifle is more catastrophic. Most people shot with a handgun live. Most people shot with a rifle die. It's because of the velocity of the bullet. As far as what else can we do, I guess I'd ask the question, what else do you want if you get confronted by three muggers on a dark street one night? What do you want at that point? I don't care whether you like the NRA, don't like the NRA. I guarantee you want a gun to defend yourself. So it's really disingenuous to try to have it both ways from some of these folks.
All right. Charles Meyer writes, so your guest thinks James Madison and the writers of the Second Amendment anticipated weapons at 30 to 45 rounds per second at over 3,000 foot per second when they wrote this. He says, come on, how come I can not own an automatic weapon then? So that's from Charles.
You can own an automatic weapon. You just have to get a tax stamp and be approved by the local sheriff.
I think he's saying that tongue-in-cheek.
Well, we had the Gatling gun in the Civil War, and even during the Revolutionary time, there were semi-automatic weapons. They were just not in the hands of everyday citizens.
Dee on Highland Road. Hi, Dee. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Thank you for saying that. That's my exact point. Why should the average citizen be able to own a Gatling gun?
Well, because the founders put the Second Amendment in as a defense against government. It was not to protect the rights to hunt.
Hey, you have the right to own a gun that shoots up to 400 rounds a minute. Read me the Second Amendment and tell me where it says that. And why does the average person need that kind of gun to hunt or to defend his home?
There's no constitutional right to hunt. The Second Amendment is not about hunting or sport shooting. It is about an armed citizenry that can stand up to its government because the founding fathers knew that government would take advantage of its citizens and enslave them if they were allowed to.
All right, so if I want to bring a cannon down Park Boulevard where I live and park it in my front yard, should I be allowed to do that?
No, I think there's certain reasonable restrictions that we mentioned those earlier. If you want a machine gun, you got to have a tax stamp. Militarized weapons, we don't allow someone to buy a Sherman tank or to buy a flamethrower. Well, maybe we do flamethrowers, but there's military-grade weapons that we restrict. Don't act like this is not already the law. Of course it is.
All right, and a few other questions that I'll try to get to from listeners as you've obviously got them fired up, Scott and Dane. Silas asked Silas Bogue, wondering if your guest could elaborate on how many programs President Reagan terminated and how many times he allowed tax increases to take effect with his support.
Ooh.
Lots of tax increases during the latter part of the Reagan years.
During the latter part of the Reagan years, until Trump, I believe he had the highest single tax cut in American history. So, a lot of that was legislative necessity with the Senate, and he didn't control the Senate the last couple of years of his term.
Dane Sherman.
John Bel Edwards is a lot more Ronald Reagan than he is Barack Obama. I can just say that.
I would agree with that.
Okay, 877-217-5757. We're going to have Howard Blum tomorrow because of what's going on, but Howard has agreed to talk with me after the show, and we'll have the interview tomorrow. So he's certainly got a compelling book about Russian spies during the Cold War that's relevant to today's discussion about Russian involvement in the 2016 election. Switching gears, Diane writes that the Advocate all but called for Tom Shedler's resignation, and this is Saturday on its editorial pages. Should Secretary Shedler stay or go, Scott Wilfong?
Oh, my goodness. We don't have all the facts. We don't know the details of it, but it is certainly troubling, and we just cannot, if there is truth to it, we cannot stand by for any sort of sexual harassment. But I know Shedler's a good guy, and I hope that there's not any truth to this. But we'll see. I think that we have to wait for the facts to come out.
All right. Dane, should Tom Shedler, the Secretary of State, who is accused of sexual harassment by a former employee who's filed a lawsuit, this is a civil suit, it's not a criminal case, should he leave his office, or should he stay and perhaps run for reelection?
He needs to go. He needs to go, and I hope he has to pay for the civil suit, which is going to be millions of dollars, as nasty as this thing looks. And just as I call for Troy Brown's resignation, I'm calling for Shedler.
All right, but there were criminal charges with Troy Brown. There are no criminal charges, and of course, Secretary Shedler says there was a relationship. The lady who filed the suit says there was not. But Shedler is the boss, and Mark Ballard, who was on this show last week, said if you're the boss in state government, you can't be consorting with your employees.
That's certainly the most concerning part of it, and I don't think I've ever seen any situation like this where the accused basically says, well, we did have sex, and the accuser says, no, we didn't. So who do you believe? It's troubling. It's very troubling.
You earlier had called for the dismissal of Mike Yenny in Jefferson Parish. So, Scott, I'll say you're consistent. You called for Troy Brown to be removed from the House, and he was. Mm-hmm. And now you're calling for a couple of Republicans to be looked at and perhaps penalized for their actions.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. If Shedler is admitting to the sex with the employee, even if it was a consensual, I think in any corporate setting or any government setting, that's a no-no. So I just... I think we should pray for him. That's what I believe.
All right. Another listener says, where is this Russian investigation going? Is it going all the way to the Oval Office, Dane Sherman?
It's going to lead to Trump's resignation prior to any kind of, impeachment. And there are going to be a lot more of his inner circle that end up indicted before that happens.
Well, I'm just waiting for that evidence of connection between Trump and Russia, because when it comes, it'll be the first piece of evidence that we've seen, because there exists none today.
But there are people all around him who are falling by the wayside.
There's people all around everywhere that are falling by the wayside.
Now, right? If Hillary Clinton's campaign manager had been accused of colluding with the Russians, I would imagine the Republicans would be having a field day with that right now.
Well, probably what would happen is he would have committed suicide by shooting himself twice in the back of the head, like Hillary's earlier accusers did. But
do you really have proof of that, Scott?
Well, we know a lot of dead bodies that have been around the Clintons for a number
of
years.
Now, name one that you believe the Clintons murdered.
Vince Foster.
Vince Foster.
Vince Foster.
Okay, Vince Foster killed himself.
And the transportation.
In Fort Marcy Park on the 20th of July, 1993. Ron Brown's plane crash.
And he had a bullet hole in his head.
There's never been proof that Ron Brown had a bullet hole. There has never been shown that Ron Brown had a bullet hole, the Commerce Secretary. That's the kind of stuff we hear, Dane, all these wild stories like pizza parlors and such.
It
has no validity at all.
No, I thought I was talking to my old buddy Will Fong, and then it sounds like Alex Jones, InfoWars, took over the mic.
What about the registrar of Vital Records in Hawaii? She had a tragic plane crash just a year or so ago, 2 years ago. She went down and died in a plane crash. The only person in Hawaii that could have verified a birth certificate. I'm sure it's just bad luck.
Barack Obama produced his birth certificate.
Well, that's what we've
heard. He produced it, and he is an – you're not going there, are you? That's it for today. We thank Scott Wilfong and Dane Sherman. We're back tomorrow, same time, same place. Thank you for listening and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.